Welcome to the Humans and AI podcast, powered by AI Frontier Network. I'm your host, Flor La Orga. Each episode, we dive into the human story shaping artificial intelligence through the journeys of entrepreneurs, builders, and leaders. We explore the insights, challenges, and visions for the future of AI and humanity. Let's uncover the human side of AI together. Great. So, Diederik. Nice to meet you. Thank you very much for making time. Yeah, so I would like to learn a little bit about you before we start with all the questions that we have prepared for you. So you've got a very interesting journey in your career. It's very interesting. But I'm curious about why did you decide to study computer science and get into engineering?
Very good questions. But before we go into that, thank you, of course, for having me, right? I'm really happy to be here. Yeah, so what motivated me to start with computer science? I think mainly I was always interested in computers. And the thing that I like most about it is that with just a keyboard and a screen, you effectively could create something out of nothing. So programming, for example, is a thing where with relatively low effort, you can already create very interesting things, I would say. And that kind of grabbed me when I was studying. So then I basically deep dive into computing science, and I think the rest is history.
Okay, thanks for a little bit of context. That's great. So you work in many companies, but the main ones that got my attention is, for example, that you work in projects like self-driving cars, right? Then you also did like supply chain vehicles. In each of them, I saw a bit of same pattern, but like you're an expert on all these things, right? Right now in Sevilla, which is your CTO in this company, you are turn the data, the knowledge that you, and you can train an AI to learn from it, right? From your experience. And you're training your team and AI to do what you do. So how do you help those people feel part of the automation process?
Yeah, very good question. Yeah, Nietzsche, I'm part of Exibia. I'm currently the CTO of Exibia Data and AI Benelux. And Exibia is an IT consultancy firm, right? We have been for quite some time, started out in the Netherlands, then grew, right? Mainly the last two years, we've been mainly focusing on AI, or our whole company became AI-centric and AI-driven. And before that, we still do. We have a cloud service line, we have a data service line, the whole shebang effectively. We also have a low-code service line, a software development service line, but all consultants. And I myself am also still a consultant. So apart from being the CTO, I still work at clients. I still basically advise them in whatever they want to achieve in terms of data and AI, basically. Getting back to your question, so how basically do you help people becoming part of that automation process? I think that automation in general, it generally always helps people, right? Whenever I build new systems, or for example, when I was involved with doing research into autonomous driving, right? So using AI for cars that basically drives themselves, I was always focused on, okay, so how does it benefit the user? And how are people helped with these type of systems? And then if you then go towards towards the automation question, I would say that the moment it starts helping people, the moment you can do your work faster or more efficient or easier, that's generally where you see people always being open for automation. So sometimes automation is being seen as a little bit of a bad word. But I think that generally automation helps. Yeah, so to get back to your question, so how do you make people part of that? Well, it's very simple, right? You're basically solving an issue, or you're improving effectively what they are doing, right? And that's how I always try to tackle these type of issues and basically, yeah, pull people into that process. Does that answer your question a little bit?
Yeah. You're also, apart from being a CTO, right, actually, thanks for saying the name right, Exibia. I said Exibia before. Yeah, you're still coach, right? So that's very interesting, to be honest with you. What is the main purpose that you're still coach you're still doing that kind of more the type that programmers do, but you're actually the CTO, you're the leader of that. So you basically, your main role is more about as leading, helping more than doing it yourself. So I found it very interesting what you do then.
Yeah, indeed. So I think there are multiple reasons for that, right? So I think that within IT, you need to stay relevant, right? So I always have the feeling that the tech stack, it changes every 3 to 5 years, right? And if you don't keep up with that, you start to become outdated quite fast. And that's also one of the reasons why I still keep coding. It's hard to find the time, of course, because you get a lot with these type of roles that you have a lot of other, effectively obligations and work to do. But the reason why I try to keep coding is mainly to stay relevant, but to also, for some parts, still understand the problem. Nice thing now, especially with, let's say the Gen AI revolution, is that coding also starts to become a little bit more approachable again. So what I've been noticing is that when I'm coding, a lot of the boilerplate work, the stuff where you have the overhead, that's taken away partly by Gen AI. So especially due to fast prototyping. Getting you have an idea and you want to work it out. I have the feeling that I can do that a lot faster now than a few years ago. So that is good as well. But the main reason why I keep coding is, I still find it fun to do and I want to stay relevant a little bit. And to be honest, I look at our CEO from the Ixivia Data and I Benelux side, Giovanni, and he is also still coding, right? So I just try to follow his example a little bit as well.
Wow, that's very interesting. Thank you. Also, I've read that you were able to grow CBI to and generate over 2 million in yearly revenue in 2 years that you've been in the company. So my question here is, obviously you were a big part of it because what you kind of leading the people, but I also would like to talk a little bit about the process and the journey that you have with your team to under your leadership to get to into the to get to this amazing goal, like achievement.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, this was specifically for Ixivia Base, which was one of the propositions that I founded within Ixivia. So a few years ago, so especially with our data engineers, that whenever we started a new project at our clients and also with our MLOps engineers, the first few months always basically was the same type of work, right? So setting up a data platform, setting up the data infrastructure, or setting up the machine learning infrastructure in order to be able to execute some type of data use case, right? So within machine learning, it could be some type of a prediction use case. Within data, it could be some type of analytical use case. But the first few months, that work was always the same. So what we did with Ixivia Base is whenever you notice that a certain type of work you would always have to do at your clients, you try to standardize it. And that was basically what Ixivia Base is, where we defined a set of platforms, which we call accelerators, which we're then able to basically roll out within a few weeks, where before it took us a few months to set up this type of infrastructure. Yeah, we now see that we can do it within a few weeks using, of course, tooling like infrastructure as code, so Terraform, but also basically infrastructure as code. So this is what Ixivia Base is, and we were able to grow that quite rapidly within those two years because we saw that there was a big ask from our clients because no one wants to be like that, because the real value is never in infrastructure, right? The real value is within the use case that you land upon this infrastructure. No one wants to be in some kind of migration track or some type of building infrastructure track for 12 months or 18 months, right? You want to get to that use case quickly because that's where the business value is. And so effectively what we try to do is with infrastructure as code, we try to decrease the time to get to a use case in production effectively, and we were able to do that quite well. And we're now doing the same within the agentic field, right? Where we have this agentic foundation, which is built all on top of the same principles.
Okay, what was a human challenge you have had to cope while introducing AIs into your workflows? Because failing, for sure, like it's part of the journey. But yeah, so can you share one human challenge?
So a human challenge. Let me think about that. Yeah, okay. So when you build IT, especially as a consultancy firm, generally you come in and you build some type of new system, right? So you either you build a new system, or you or a client of us, they have an older system that they want to migrate away from, right? They want to modernize, and that always goes hand in hand with let's say setting up new processes within your organization, right? People and employees need to get used to the new way of working. And I think one thing that's interesting or a little bit challenging as well within the AI field, especially within Gen AI, is that for most systems that you're building, you always need to have a feedback cycle in place, right? Because in the end, most Gen AI systems are non-deterministic, meaning that you, given the same input, you could get a different output, right? So you need to set up a proper feedback loop and basically a proper feedback cycle for this to make sure that your system keeps performing in the right way, right? But that also as a user, you can basically give some type of feedback. Okay, this is correct and this is not correct. And based on that feedback, you can basically tune the system again. And I think these type of processes, you don't see them that much within organizations. And this is actually a challenge of setting this up from the process side, right? Because before you have, okay, so you have like IT, right? You build a piece of software, then you have some type of testing team, and then you launch this software in production, and then it tends to work. Now you actually need to have an active, the best setup for this within Gen AI is to have an active feedback cycle where also your end user is able to participate within this feedback cycle. And that's why with a lot of these type of systems, you see sometimes thumbs up or thumbs down emoticon, right? And there's exactly that feedback cycle that you don't see in, let's say, more standard, and I don't want to say old school, but more standard software. So that is, I think, one of the biggest impacts in terms of, let's say, the human side of things.
Okay, thanks. So talking a little bit more about feedback, what are some of the most dramatic ways that customer feedback happens? Just one. One is enough.
What is enough? Okay. So we are a consultancy firm, right? And we get so many questions from our clients already 4, 5, 6 years ago. 8 years ago, like, can't we use an AI model for this or some type of data science model, right? And that will fix it. And most of the time in most of the cases, the answer is generally no, because the use case wasn't a good fit. But nowadays, we are getting challenged quite heavily about, okay, can't you use an agent for that to basically solve a certain issue? And that's more often than not, the answer is starting to become yes. So one example that I mentioned for it, Exibia Base, where we're basically deploying platforms for our clients. So we're using infrastructure as code to deploy a data platform or a cloud foundation within a relatively quick time. So I got challenged by one of our clients that says, okay, but why do you still need to do it yourself? Why don't you have an agent that just deploys that platform for us, right? Yeah, and that was a very good question. And we're now looking into that as well. And to be honest, I think it's a very viable use case. And so we're definitely spending time on that. I have more examples, but you mentioned only one. So this is the one.
you can share another one if you want. I don't know how many do you have. So just kind of, okay. Since you were thinking, I was like, okay, one is enough to don't make you think more. But if you want to share one more, it's okay. Welcome.
So maybe another one which I found cool actually was that, so we generally tend to set up teams with our different organizations as well within, and also, so whenever we develop something, you also need to have a certain support attached to it, right? So most teams out there, they spend 20% on support, 20% on cleaning up, cleaning or improving what is there, and 60% on new features. That is basically a good rule. And so we set up this support channel, right? And where this team is 5 people and then one person, one engineer was on support for a week, and then the next week someone else is on support. And someone said to me like, okay, but I think that most of the questions that we're getting here, we can also use an agent to answer those questions as long as we give it the right information. And that's also something that we're currently looking into. So internally with these type of clients saying, okay, instead of us spending 20% on support because you're paying for that, let's see if with an agent we can decrease that to 10%, for example. That was another one where we got challenged quite hard. So we're also looking into that, how to best solve that. And there are already tools out there that do that, by the way. Yeah, we're looking into implementing one of those.
Yeah, my question was actually very, because there's so much feedback and so many challenges, right? So it's like you can go for the whole day. But it's actually very good examples what you shared. So talking more about AI agents, how, in your opinion, how AI captured human quality decision making?
Yeah, so this is a very difficult question, right? So I think that when I started out and I did research into human driving behavior, right? And at that time, I want to stress this, I didn't get anywhere, right? So the models that I were building, they were not performing that well. This was 10 years ago, right? I still did research into that, but it was quite difficult, I would say. Now, however, if you look at, you know, if you look at the current models that are being churned out there, right, I think we're getting slowly to models that start to not, they're definitely not on the human level, right? I want to absolutely stress that. But I think that, you know, especially last 2 years, we're getting closer and closer. I don't know if you're familiar with the humanity's last exam, but this is one of the, let's say, one of the tests or one of the suites that that's being used for testing the performance of the new new Gen AI models that are being released. And kind of the idea is that if you have a system that is able to pass the humanity's last exam with 100%, right, then you at least have a system that starts to become, let's say, near human intelligence, I would say. And we're definitely not there yet. I think that with the best models, we're around 17%, something like that, 17-20%. But these are the types of ways of basically capturing this and making clear, okay, how good is a model in terms of, let's say, human behavior. But we're definitely not there yet. And I also could not tell you when we will get there or maybe if we're going to get there, but we're getting better. I think that's the main point here.
Okay, before we were talking a little bit about that, you said that you got a business inspired because of your CEO that is Phil Coates. So going into the same lines, I would like to ask you, who is doing work you admire right now in AI? Like if there's some big people.
Can you repeat the question a little bit?
Yeah, who is doing work you admire right now in AI?
Okay. So who do I admire? So I'm a little bit boring in that, I would say. So I really like David Silver, right? I learned so much about him, I learned so much from him, right? So it was already like 8-10 years ago when he was giving reinforcement learning courses, about reinforcement learning. And also the stuff that they're doing with DeepMind is extremely interesting. So definitely David Silver is on the, definitely in the top three, I would say. And then, of course, you know, I also learned a lot from Ed Wang. I think a lot of people did. And he's also one of the guys that I tend to follow quite closely. So those two are definitely on the top of the list.
Okay. We know as well that AI agents are kind of taking more and more on all the repetitive tasks. Not that repetitive anymore. So just kind of more important tasks every day as you also build AI agents. You know that. But so now talking a little bit on the human aspect, what new human roles or skills do you see emerging in enterprise environments?
Yeah. I actually have to think about it a little bit. So I think that, okay, so looking at where we are now, right? I think we're still at the forefront of what is possible with let's say, the new AI technologies that arise. And I think that if you look just in general at the development cycle of tech, right? So it's always like first, so everything is very interesting. You want to implement it, et cetera, et cetera. And then suddenly people start thinking about, okay, but what about security? What about ownership? What about governance? And we saw that the same within data science and machine learning, but also just within data in general. So I think that 5 or 10 years ago, when you talked about a data owner or someone owning a data product, people didn't really know what you were thinking about. But the ideas behind developing a good data product that is being used and adapted widely within your organization, and that comes with a data product owner that is responsible for that. And I think that next to the roles of AI engineers and AI scientists and people that actually implement these type of AI systems, I think we're also going to get something like an AI agent owner, right? Where people or teams are responsible for the agents that they create within the organization. And they can prove the value of the different type of agents. Because what you don't want is that you get basically 100 or 200 or thousands of agents within your organization, right? Where only a few actually add value. And so I think that roles around that will be created in terms of some type of AI agent owner, I would call it. So actually being able to point at people and say, yeah, you are responsible for these agents. And yeah, you need to make sure that they have a certain performance. But I haven't seen that role yet. So this is just me thinking where we will be going. I want to stress that. But I do have the feeling that, yeah, these type of questions about how effective are the agents and who is actually going to own this, and these will be the type of questions that we would need to be answering in the next 12 months, for example.
12 months, a year. So, that's cool. So on a personal note, in all your journey as now as the CTO and as well engineer, what was the lesson that you've learned from a challenge that you have through all your journey, which obviously you have a lot all the time, so that you believe is essential for future builders to know?
Yeah, so learned a lot the last few years, but as I said, also made a lot of mistakes that I learned from. I think there's still a balance to be struck, right? So whenever we talk about Gen AI, you know, basically new agentic systems, especially for a programmer, it's very easy to just say, I will pass this, you know, this type of work off to an agent, right? Saying I have a certain problem that I need to solve and I'm just going to push it to an LLM and it will solve this problem for me. Nice thing about it is that I have to do a lot less programming. I have a lot less to think about. But the challenge is that because these systems are non-deterministic, you need to think rather well about what the output will become and how can I monitor, trace this correctly? How can I make sure that the governance is set up correctly around this? So what I learned, especially in the last 12 months, 12 to 24 months, I would say that there's always a balance where I say, okay, yeah, this I just need to do basically within the old way, just writing it out in code, right? This problem is maybe a little bit complex, but it's not too complex to basically put it within code instead of pushing the issue towards an agent. And I think that's one of the things that I had a period where even the most simplest things I would just push towards an LLM. But I've gotten back from that. And I think there's definitely a balance to be struck here. For people starting out with this or just getting into it, I think that's the most important thing. There's still a good place, right? A good place and time for just using code versus pushing something to an agent or to an LLM. So that's one of my learnings.
Yeah, I bet that you have many. There's another thing, like, we don't have the whole day, unfortunately. So, okay, was one of the lessons. I know that you're engineering and just like your CTOs. I know that for you, that the company is and the technology first thinking, it's a normal thing, but I want to challenge you a little bit. What is your thoughts about staying human-centered in this new AI era?
Yeah. Staying human-centered. Yeah, so if you look at how the world develops, right? This AI thing, right? It might be one of our new revolutions, right? Where suddenly we say, yeah, a lot more can be automated, which previously was manual work, right? Or it was extremely difficult to automate it, right? And that's why we didn't automate the piece of work that we wanted to automate. But now with Gen AI, we can automate it, right? But I think that this is nothing new. And I think that if you look over the last 100, 200 years, there's always times where you basically technology and innovation, basically results in new jobs being created, but also effectively old jobs disappearing. And I think the same will hold for AI as well. So I'm pretty sure that some of the jobs that we have today will start to disappear due to AI. But generally, if you look at the past, society finds a way, right? So there will be new jobs created. What those jobs are, I couldn't necessarily tell you. So that's the big question, right? And hopefully it will be way more focused on, it will be more focused on jobs that actually require a real human attention. But yeah, what those jobs will become, I couldn't tell you, but I do know that we will find a way where we have, let's say, maybe more interesting and better jobs than we have currently.
Okay, thanks, Diederik. I'm sorry for this last question. I know, I was like, I'm going to get a little bit of a challenge just to see. You're very good at it. Perfect. Thank you. Yes, so actually, that's it. So we just kind of finished the interview. Thank you very much for this. It's been very organic, very, for me, very easy to, very nice conversation. So I appreciate your time and joining to Humans and AI podcast. And I hope that you enjoy it too.
Yeah, thank you very much. Of course, I enjoyed it. Good questions, right? And if you have more, you can always reach out.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Humans and AI podcast. We are here to spotlight the people making AI more human, one story at a time. See you in the next episode.